Accession number 31448, Mr. Roy Jones.
Reel 9.
Could you tell me what happened next then? Now, I believe you went to the Infantry Training Centre, Royal Marines, Lymston. Is that correct?
Yes,
that
that's right.
March
14th. Yes, from. March 1949, yeah. And I think now, if I tend to look back a bit now, what we're leading up to now is the fact that the previous two places I've been at, which was the seamanship side of training and the depot at the Royal Marines at Deal, now things start to gather pace a little bit. So we started off at the Infantry Training Centre, and our squad consisted, I think, possibly of about 40 people. And our platoon officer there, as far as I can recall, was Lieutenant Waters. I'll tell you a little bit more about him later on. But we arrive at Lymston to start the infantry side of the train at the Royal Marines. It was pretty much identical to what I'd done when I was in the army. Very little differed, apart from the bull, if you like. The bull was more intense in the Royal Marines than I ever encountered anywhere else. And I suppose the reason for this is, and I think I've mentioned this before, it's just another form of discipline, that if they push and push and you can take all that they throw in front of you, then they know then that they've got a good Marine in front of them. So we start at the Infantry Training Centre doing route marches, speed marches, and the speed marches came thick and fast and a little more intense than what they were when I was in the army, and a little bit longer. There was lots of exercises on the Dartmoor and Exmoor and Woodbury Common. We used to do a lot of field firing on Dartmoor, and it hasn't been unknown for farmers to complain that sheep had been shot. But that was never done intentionally, because the sheep were allowed to roam over a field firing range. So we always thought then it was up to the farmer to make sure the sheep didn't wander on the field firing range. Although I suppose that would be a very, very hard thing to do. Because you've ever been on Dartmoor, they don't sort of fence the thing off. So it would be pretty hard for that not to happen, I would imagine. You do lots of platoon and sections attacks, and the big thing there was the down on what we used to call the bottom field. In fact, I still think it exists today, but they use it with the commando training today, but we used it infantry training, where they had the assault course. And that was pretty intense. And you do the assault course, it's somewhat like, what, about half a mile long, I would think. Then at the end of it, you have to pick one of your mates up with his full equipment and do a fireman's lift and run with him for over 200 yards. And you were timed on all this. And just at the moment, I can't even remember what the time allowance was. It's such a long time ago. But no, it was pretty exhausting stuff. And you always thought that you couldn't take another pace. And that's where I found was the big difference, joining the Corps to joining anything else. Because you always seem to find that extra step. It's totally funny, and people might think that I'm being biased, but I'm not. It's just the way they are with you, the way, if you like, for the want of a better word, condition you, the way they build up your confidence. It is, and it's true what they say, it's just mind over matter, that's all it is. And you can, if needs be, always take that extra step that will either make or break a situation that you're in. And that's what was really hammered home to us all the time. The other thing, when you're doing this assault course, they have overhead bars where you hang on and then you go forward one bar at a time. And you're all on the bar and you go over. If one man drops off, then you're all back and you're all on the bar again. And the idea of that is that if one man drops off, everybody's got to do it again. So in the end, the lot of you get onto that one person that keeps dropping off. Till in the end, he's getting it from his squad mates, if you like. And that seems to buck him up more than an NCO screaming down his neck, because we're all getting onto him. And that's the way it was. I was probably very fortunate, along with a lot of others there, that I never came off it once. And that's not bragging, that's just... It happened to a lot of people, but always seemed to be the same person, and you always seem to get one or maybe two, and they tend always to let the side down, sort of thing. I don't say they do it intentionally, but what I found with the core is if you took notice of what they told you, and they really concentrate on upper body strength, and I believe that they do it a lot more now than they did when we were in, because they've got all sorts of different equipment now, which you can imagine in the gym now. They've got all mod cons now where you can go in your own time. We weren't that fortunate, and I think that's a good thing, because if you are that really keen, you will do that. You will go for an hour or so in your own time, say of a Saturday or a Sunday, whatever, and do a little bit to make it easier for yourself in the long run. But all in all, it wasn't bad. Then there was.
Do you think your previous experience was of value to you?
I think the time I spent in the army was of great value to me, in all stages through the Royal Marines, because I'm not that naive to think that if I had never have been in the army, that I would have done as well as I did do in the training. Because it must stand you in some good stead, because you sort of get the feeling of what it's like being away from home. You know what it's all about wearing a uniform. You know what it's all about with a rifle, a Sten gun, a Bren gun. You know what it's all about when you're route marching and you're speed marching. So all those things that my friend and I had done before, and there was other people who'd been in the army in the same squad as us, and they found it the same. And what I'm saying, it must have been hard for lads of 17 going in into a situation like that, because with the best will in the world, I found that as a lad of 17, you didn't have the upper body strength or the strength in your legs that you have when you're 21 or 22. Which is pretty obvious to anybody. So I think in that way, the question you've just asked is yes, it certainly benefited me with my life in the Corps. The rest of the training there was, we used to do a lot of rope work, and the one was over, we used to call it the Tarzan course. But they had a longer one at the commando school, which I'll talk about after this. They had a small one at Limston. It wasn't that big, but it just probably gave you the rudiments of things to come. And that was about, we did a lot more arms drill and foot drill at Limston. And once you become the senior squad, you're classed as the King's squad. And it's funny, but your chest goes out another couple of inches when you reach that. to think, you all think to yourself, God, we're a senior squad in the training centre now. And when you were a senior squad, you wore a white lanyard on your blues. Everywhere you went and you were marching as a squad, everybody looked at you because everybody thought, like we did, God, they're smart. Because when you've been together for then, it would have been almost 9 months, then you do. And it's funny enough, you used to be in any part of that place at Limston, and if the King squad were marching, you'd just stop and listen. You didn't have to see them, you only had to listen. And you could hear the heels, all as one, hitting the concrete on the floor, which was really emphasised. And it was good. Really enjoyed it. And I must tell you this, because this comes into it, this. I was never, ever picked up for being dirty or my equipment dirty or anything right through training. So when we got to Limpton, that is where they used to choose the King's Badgeman. And the King's Badgeman was the best all-round recruit throughout training. But that didn't involve the Commando Training Centre. The King's Badge was issued at Limpston at the end of the infantry training. It didn't come after the Commando training. So I was selected along with another Marine, a Marine Troubridge, for the King's Badge. And I'd always been told, or taught if you like, to have nothing to do with politics while you're serving in the armed forces. Anyway, the day that we had to go up, Teddy Troubridge and myself, in front of the commanding officer at Limpston, to be interviewed for the King's Badge. And this King's Badge, incidentally, is a wreath of laurels with GR in the middle, and it goes on your left shoulder, I think. Yeah, your left shoulder. And nobody can take that off you. It can only be taken off you with court-martial. It can't be taken off you by anybody. So it's a pretty big thing in the Corps to be a King's Badgeman. And if there's nobody suitable in that particular squad for a King's Badgeman, then they don't just issue it because one's got to be issued. They don't issue it at all. So him and I goes up for the interview, and my interview, and I went in and they asked you certain things, and they asked me something political, and I just turned around and said, well, all the time I've been in the service, I've always been taught to have nothing to do with politics. You know, it's not our problem. And so that went. Anyway, I came out, and our squad officer, Lieutenant Waters, how'd it go? I said, very well. And it did go well. Anyway, next thing, Teddy Troubridge goes in. He comes out. Nobody knew the answers then. Anyway, I must tell you a thing about Lieutenant Waters. I'll come back to the King's Badge in a minute. Lieutenant Waters. There was a song, whenever we went on a route march, before we started a route march or anything like that, speed marches or route marches, he'd insist, Lieutenant Waters, that our water bottles were filled. And he'd come round and he'd test every water bottle, you know, and off you'd go. And if you came for a break during a route march, you sat down, you didn't open your water bottle, no matter how thirsty you were. Because he did a cork go, and he'd say, right, NCOs, get amongst these buggers, somebody's just opened a water bottle. And the NCOs had come through and opened a bloody water bottle. No. So there was a song came out during that time, I think it was called Cool Waters, was the name of the song. So we christened him Cool Waters, and he took it, he got to know, and he took it all in good faith, you know, he was all right. Anyway, to get back to the King's Badge, next thing I knew, I was sent for, and I was told I was unsuccessful, that the badge had been awarded to Marine Troubridge. So when I came out, and there's Lieutenant Waters, he knew, and he just looked at me, and he just said, "It's not right, this. It's not right." Because this Marine Troubridge had been picked up here, there and everywhere for being slovenly and, you know. And Lieutenant Waters and our platoon sergeant, they went to see the CO, but didn't make a little, one iota of difference. And then we found out who was coming to pass the squad out for duty. And it happened to be Vice Admiral Troubridge. So, you can draw your own conclusions from that. But it was in the paper the next day, headlines, I think, in the Exeter News, or the Exmouth News. Vice Admiral presents son with King's badge. It's written in the stars, isn't it? So, that destroyed me a little bit. Well, not destroyed me. I was bitterly, bitterly disappointed. Because, as I say, I'd never put a foot wrong all the time. So I was really disappointed. But then again, I suppose, with my outlook as regards promotion, rightly or wrongly, it probably did him more good than it would have done me. Although it might have done me a lot of good if I'd have taken it, because then it would have altered the way I felt. But nevertheless, he went on, and I think he finished up as a major, I think. But I didn't hold anything against him. It wasn't him. It was the powers that be that made the choice. It wasn't him personally. So that was that. So his father comes and we passed out.
Was there a big parade passing out from the ITC?
Families can be invited, yes, and you have the band of the Royal Marines there, and you do a display of drill and what have you. It's, I don't know, I suppose anybody who's joined the Royal Marines, I don't know whether they had it during the war, this sort of thing, but anybody joined the Royal Marines during peacetime and this thing went on, it's a big thing for a Royal Marine to when his passing out parade comes, because then you know you're there almost, because that isn't the finish of it at Limpston. So that is the end of Limpston.
And that's August 49.
And that was August 1949, yeah. September 49, I think. Wait a minute. August 49, yes. So then, we're drafted then to the Commando School, Royal Marines, which is at Bickley in Devon, which was
Bickley.
Bickley. B-I-C-K-L-E-I-G-H. In Devon. It's just outside.
So you went there in... It's a commando training school.
Commando School, Royal Marines. That's what it was called then, Commando School. 9th of August to the 18th of September.
So a short course, this one?
8 weeks. It's an 8 week commando course, and this one is all go.
So how do they start you when you get there?
Well, you're already... train Marines, apart from doing the commando side. So you're expected now to do everything that's thrown at you. A little bit harder, but nevertheless, you're expected to do it. And this is where it came really intense. The speed marches increased. Not so much route marches, but speed marches. They had what they call a scramble course. That is a course that they run over very, very rough terrain for about 2 miles. Then there was the Tarzan course. I'll go into these individually in a minute. Then there was the Tarzan course, which was probably about a mile long, and you never touched the floor. was what they call the death slide. And all the regains over the stream that they had there. So when we first went, we were put into troops. The squad is split into two. And I think I was in Normandy troop. Forget the name of the other one. So the squad was split into two troops. I was in a different squad than Troubridge this time. We were both in different ones. So we start the commando training. And we started with the scramble course.
Now tell me about that then.
Well, this was a course set. It was over very, very rough terrain, rocks and what have you and all sorts. And it stretched for about 2 miles. And there was a time put on this as well. Everything at the commando school was on a time basis. And that was on a time basis. And many a bloke has busted his arm or broke his ankle on this thing. If you can imagine, it's just like rocks and boulders and everything. And you're there with your full kit and going over this thing. It was all tough enough stuff.
Was it sort of an assault course in rough terrain?
In rough terrain, yeah. It was all right, though. Then there was the Tarzan course.
Now, describe that. You were going to...
Well, that is, you start and you climb a rope up into tree things. Then there's a series of rope. It could be, do you know what a Jacob's ladder's like? It's just a rope either side. Well, it mightn't be rope, it could be wire or something, with rungs across. Well, they're strung vertical from tree to tree, and you've got to go across that, kneeling, you know, with all your gear on. And the big thing about that, you're high up, so the trick is you don't look down. You just fix your eye on something ahead of you, and just you move the opposite leg to the opposite arm on that. You know, if you're moving your right arm forward, your left arm forward, you move your right leg. You don't try and do because you can't. But some people tried, but you can't. That is, your weight's evenly distributed then, isn't it? If it's your left arm, it's your right leg. That. Then there was the one that the single rope with two ropes up like that, and you go across that way. Then there was the one across the ravine with one rope above you and one rope underneath you, and you do the walk across that way, sideways, hand over hand like that. Open your legs and go across the single rope at the bottom. Then there was a rope across the stream where once you got into the middle, you had your equipment on. The instructor would tell you to stop and drop off the rope. So you dropped off the rope hanging up, hanging down with your two hands. Then he'd say, right, get back on the rope. So you had to do what we used to call a regain. And the idea of that was that... It's pretty hard to describe this. It's easy to show somebody. You pull yourself up to your chest. Then you put your right arm over so the rope is underneath your arm. Let me get this now. Up. Pull yourself up to your chest. Put your right arm over. You swing your right leg up onto the rope, and then you bring your left leg up and you swing it down, and the momentum of taking that leg down swings you under the rope onto the top. And that comes the awkward part then, because the big thing is when you kick your leg and you swing over, as you swing over you look straight up like that with your arm on the rope, and if you can get your head right up and look straight like that, you'll stay on. But if you hold your head down, you go right round. And I've seen this happen time and time without number, that people will kick too hard and then they don't look forward along the rope with their arm outstretched. So they go back under the rope. So you can imagine what happens. If they do this a couple of times, their arms get tired. So they dangle again. And then they're trying to pull themselves up. It's impossible. You won't do it. If you don't get up there the first time, it's very, very rare that you will do it after. And one of the big things then was the instructors used to shout, salute before you hit the water. So what you could see their hands opening, and just open their hands and go, and they used to salute like that before they hit the water at the bottom. And then they used to grab a rope, pull themselves out, and go back to the start and do it again. But I never ever get, might be just pure luck, but I never ever got a dosing of water. But by this stage, you're so together as a group. It's really hard to explain how you feel, or how a group of men can really knit together. And obviously, I think younger ones today must hear ex-servicemen talk about mates in the service and one thing and another. But it's true. You pull as one, and you'll never, ever get mates in Civvy Street of the calibre that you had in the service. Probably it's probably a totally different environment anyway, because when push comes to shove, you know you can depend on them. And that's a big thing these days. So that was that. Then the death slide was one that I really liked.
What's the death slide?
Well, what you said, when you got to the top of this, off the rope course, up to the top, you're probably about 100 feet, 150 feet up, if not more. And there's a single rope stretching from the top of the tree at an angle right down to floor level. When you reach there, they give you a toggle rope, and the toggle rope is just a rope with two loops either end, and there's a bucket of water, and what you do, you dip your toggle rope in the water, put one hand through one loop, throw it over the rope, put the other hand in and stand there. An instructor will just say go, and you just step off and you go down, and you reach probably 80 mile an hour. When you see the ground coming towards you and you know you're going to hit the ground, the idea then is you hit the ground running. So what you do, you start moving your legs as if you're riding a bike, and you let go with one hand, pull the rope, and off you go. You're running. It's totally different now. When you do the death slide now, they have a break at the bottom. They put another rope over it like that, so that your rope hits that and pulls you, stops you. I could show you that. I've got a video. But that was that. We did a bit of milling.
Had you done milling before? I can't quite remember.
Yeah, that. I did it in the army. We didn't do much of that.
Yeah, you've done milling, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
So that didn't come as any surprise to me. We did a little unarmed combat. Surprisingly, not a lot.
That does surprise me, because I thought the commanders, it was all...
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. But we didn't do a great deal of it then, but they do now, by all accounts. But we didn't do a lot then.
What type were you doing?
It's how to parry a knife attack, how to creep up behind somebody and break their neck, or, you know, that sort of thing.
But not a lot of it.
But not as much as they do today. And I don't know, I think partly because in them days, commandos weren't used as much as what they use now. Because in them days, the Royal Marines provided two elements, one at sea and one ashore. And I don't think the unarmed combat side came into it as much as it does now.